Hey guys, before we get to today's show, I want to remind you that even though he pulled a very unkind April Fool's Day prank on yours truly, which he made me think the Seahawks might be trading Russell Wilson, you should all download and subscribe to the Adam Schefter podcast anyways. He has great guests, most recently running back Najee Harris, and it's a lot of fun. You can find the Adam Schefter podcast wherever you get your pods. On top of that, baseball's back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with over 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. Are you ready to see where the next generation of NFL stars will go? The 2021 draft is coming and you do not want to miss it. Join us for live coverage of all 3 days as our NFL and college football experts break down every pick. And our NFL insiders bring you behind the scenes with exclusive access. The 2021 NFL Draft starts April 29th at 8 p.m. Eastern, live on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks Walker Little means mom only takes you out for 10 minutes. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. Walker Little is a prospect in this year's draft. And my guest today is Mike Renner, first time guest. I can't believe this is the first time you ever been on my podcast. That's crazy. Thank you so much, Mike.
No, it's an honor. And seriously, glad to be here.
Mike is the lead draft analyst. I did ask him who he was leading, and he's the only draft that he's just the guy at PF. But
makes it easier that way.
Yeah,
just makes it easier.
Lenny's the lead dog analyst at ESPN. He's also the only dog analyst. But Mike does many things. He also hosts a podcast called Two for One Drafts, which is about the draft, obviously. And I'm looking at it now, though. It's a little bit misleading because there's a picture, and I think the one that's you has long hair, and you don't have long hair, so that could be confusing. I don't know if you thought about changing the artwork for that.
Oh, I've asked for it to be changed. Don't you worry. Like, I want it changed, but because I look absolutely ridiculous with the long hair. But that's why I cut it in the first place.
We could just switch, and I could do that show, and the hair looks like my hair. And
I don't know if you'd want to talk with Austin that much. He can be a little over the top.
Well, I've listened to it before. It's an excellent podcast. I also am an avid reader of Mike's draft guide, the PFF draft guide. Mike, tell them where they can get it and what it is.
Yes, so it's 300 player profiles, team pages with needs and stuff, and they have all the PFF data that you guys know and love on the NFL side, mm-hmm. like coverage stats for corners, pressure stats for D linemen, O linemen, that sort of thing, like advanced stats, like heat maps for quarterbacks, where they throw most often. Use that for Mac Jones, profiling him to the Kyle Shanahan Ooh. Offense, but. You can get all that with pretty much any PFF subscription, even a monthly subscription. You get it, $9.99. Get that subscription, you get a draft guide that comes with it.
Yeah, the stats are super useful. Just looking through it, I mean, you know, you can see snaps where guys, you know, the positions they played over the years, that kind of thing, which tends to be missing from some draft coverage. And it's really, honestly, like hearing you describe it, it's such a waste because we're really only going to talk about big names today, and that is. Very comprehensive, and we're going to try to be comprehensive and get through a lot of players, but we only have so much time. Last week with Spencer Hall, I talked about the quarterbacks and the skill players. Didn't even get to the offensive linemen because we had to go on tangents about Love Island, UK. So we are going to talk about the offensive linemen a little bit today, the defensive linemen, the edge rushers, linebackers, cornerbacks, safeties. I'm cramming. I'm so glad you're here because you are the expert. I am the person desperately cramming and trying to watch Tulsa. I'm not going to lie to you. I did not watch Tulsa football.
I was
going to
say you weren't watching Tulsa.
What is a Golden Hurricane? It sounds like something that should be like not safe for work. And I
don't know, but they beat Notre Dame once, and I was pretty upset about that back in like was that 2012 or something.
Well, now I love the Golden Hurricanes. I also love Zaven Collins. I'm going to bring him up. But anyways, I'm cramming all the non like power schools now, and let's just start with the offensive linemen because we were going to talk about that last week, and I want to start kind of macro actually and ask you a question because last year's offensive line. Class, the first round was insane. Like just in terms of the how those players, your Wirfs, your Wills, how they translated to the NFL. This year we're told this is a very good class, in particular with the tackles. Is it unrealistic or would it be unfair to say, hey, look how good that turned out last year? There's a trend. Like if you're a team taking the first round this year and deciding between offensive linemen and, say, a skill player, like, you should take an offensive lineman because look how well it's gone lately.
No, I think last year is an outlier in terms of NFL readiness. Like, those four guys were as good a prospects and as good like a completed guys as you'll get. And even one of them, you know, even Andrew Thomas, the one drafted first, still really wasn't NFL ready. Like, as we saw, He didn't do that well there for the Giants. So I do think the worst of the world, the Mekhi Becton, Jedrick Wills, those three, that's an outlier. And we were talking about even at the time about those, that top of that draft class, top of that tech class was an outlier and how good it was from what we've seen here at PFF in our 7 years of doing this. This one, I'd put two guys sort of in that tier, in Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater. Penei Sewell, the Oregon tackle. Rashawn Slater, the Northwestern tackle, both opted out this past year. And then after that, it's kind of a crapshoot in terms of, I'm not sure any of those guys will step in and be great right away, but I do think the depth of talent after those top two is, again, unlike any of the classes we've seen the prior 6 years doing this at PFF.
So Sewell and Slater seems like a good place to start because they're, I would say, like, at the beginning of draft season, it was the consensus. It was almost, it was, seemed to be unanimous. Penei Sewell, generational talent. No one that big should move like that. I've said before on our shows, like, I cannot evaluate offensive line play, and I'm not going to front and pretend that I can. But even someone as dumb as me, when I watch Oregon highlights, he stands out. Like, he, if anything, is like the only one that stands out, frankly. But lately, you know, you have seen mocks where Slater and him have switched places a little bit here and there, of course, also opted out as well. Like, do you think there's anything to, not in terms of how it's going to play out, I'm just talking about talent and how you regard these players. Do you think it would be defensible for a team to take Slater over Penei Sewell? Defensible.
I think Slater's safer in some ways. Like, defensible in terms, he was better on a football field in the coachable aspects of football. Penei Sewell is better at the non-coachable aspects of football, the being 330 pounds and moving like you weigh 240 pounds. Like, he is a different animal in terms of what he can do physically. Right. And the crazy thing about Sewell to me is, last time we saw him play football, he was 19. I don't know how many offensive linemen in the history of college football you would have drafted top, been willing to draft top five after they were 19 years old. But Penei Sewell's, like, Joe Thomas was a senior when he came out. Quentin Nelson was a senior when he came out. That's when we started talking about those guys as, you know, generational type talents. I'm talking about that with Penei Sewell after sophomore tape. He didn't get to see his junior tape. So that to me is the thing with Sewell. It's just like, man, what could he be? Because what he brings to the table physically is different from really any guy, even like in last year's class. That was crazy. Like, no one was talking about Tristan Wirfs after his sophomore year as a top five pick. Andrew Thomas is a top five pick. So that's the thing about Sewell, that's the intriguing part. But Rashawn Slater, like, on the football field, we saw what he did against Chase Young. Handled Chase Young better than anyone handled Chase Young in 2019. And pretty much only four pressures allowed all season long. Just, he's so solid and so safe. Just not quite the level of physical tools that Sewell's bringing to the table. But it's not like he's bereft.
Oh,
like, the dude's right? Athletic in his own right. So, yeah.
A little bit small. A little on the smaller side. Up. Well, Slater, we were talking today in the show about Carolina, which I think is a really interesting team in the draft, you know, staying at eight, having made the trade for Darnold. You know, I've said repeatedly, I think if Fields is still there, for whatever reason, they should just take him. But Kuiper had Devontae Smith going there, which, you know, it's defensible. But Carolina, with the obvious need at tackle, like, do you think eight is a reach for Slater, or given what you said, do you think he makes sense there?
I think he makes sense there. He's going to be 11th on our final draft board, and that's just because I worry about him necessarily staying a tackle or maybe kicking inside a guard. But I think after 11, there's like a tier of, I feel very good about the top 11 in this class, and that includes a bunch of quarterbacks as well. But in terms of being blue chip type of talents, and then at 12 or so, I really don't know. That's when it gets sort of hairy. So I'd put him in that tier of guys that if they don't work out in the NFL, I don't think it's necessarily because of on-field, like the talent and how gifted the top 11 on the PFF board already are at playing football. It's going to be because of other issues if they don't pan out.
Who do you guys have Carolina taking then? Just out of curiosity.
Oof. I think they go Slater, yeah, or Sewell. I think Sewell may follow their truthful.
Oh, you really? You do? Well, then that would seem to be a massive coup for them if that was to actually happen.
Yeah, I do think the weapons will come off the board.
Have you seen that? It was like, I don't know if Bengals Twitter made it, the meme of Joe Burrow. I can't believe I'm using the word Bengals Twitter meme in a sentence and like insinuating that normal human beings have seen this, but it's like a meme of...
There are dozens of them.
Joe Burrow like trying to throw the ball to Ja'Marr Chase and getting sacked and then...
Oh, yes, I have seen this.
It's like a very rudimentary... Sort of yeah. Anyways, look it up.
Trying to explain offensive line value versus wide receiver value.
If you haven't seen this meme, congratulations on having a healthy, normal life. So you mentioned, though, Slater potentially kicking into guard. It seems like, to me, like based on all the various mocks I've seen, Elijah Vera Tucker out of USC, who has played both guard and tackle, most people seem to think he's a cut above potentially on the interior. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'd put him in his own sort of tier. Yeah, if you're not calling Slater a guard, then I think he is clearly the top offensive lineman. Landon Dickerson would be close.
Right.
But Landon Dickerson has no ACL in his left knee. You know, he's shredded it twice at this point. That's just...
He did a cartwheel.
He's not going to get drafted higher because of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, Dickerson... I can't decide... Well, I don't want to make this about the Seahawks. I can't decide if I mean, yeah. Anyways, we're not going to do that. Yeah.
You can
okay.
Make it about Seahawks if you want.
Well, I'll save that for my questions at the end. Okay. Let's talk about the defensive tackles. This is another one where it seems like there's like a bunch of positions here where there's like very widely agreed upon, potentially in their own tier, number one, and that would be Christian Barmore out of Alabama. But well, I felt like great enthusiasm, but then I worried that was recency bias because obviously. He got so much better as the season went on and then literally peaked at the right time in, you know, the playoffs. Does the fact that Barmore was relatively where he was, by the way, when you go back and watch the Natty, and I've watched it now twice, I think since then, he is so crazy good in it. Like, he was probably the best defensive player on the field, right? My brain.
No, 100% was.
Yeah.
In that game and the Notre Dame game.
And in the Notre Dame game, yes. He made your guys' lives miserable. So, and that's a good offensive line, which is important too, right? When we're talking about Barmore and the pass rush production and the upside there. The problem is he didn't do jack against Florida or I have a list of games here in front of me. There's a few early in the season where he just disappeared. And does that concern you at all? If we're trying to regard him as this like consensus number one, interior defensive lineman who also has pass rush upside.
It doesn't necessarily concern me when I then look at the other guys in this class. Like it's that bad with who these other defensive tackles are and their consistency and how, you know, often they show up as pass rushers. But if we're putting him in a tier of, you know, comparing him to last year's class, Derek Brown, Javon Kinlaw, kind of the pros for Barmore is he's coming out a year younger. He obviously got the high level competition in the national championship playoff, the high sort of profile games to showcase himself, whereas those other guys didn't. But they were, I don't want to say finished products coming out, Kinlaw and Brown, but it's just like those guys dominated their senior years. They were every single game pretty much showing up, and that's why you felt comfortable drafting them with top 15 picks. I'm not sure Barmore... Obviously, like you said there, he didn't quite do that, but I don't think you can fake what he did, you know, against Notre Dame and Ohio State. Those are darn good interior offensive lines. Guys he's beating are going to be playing in the NFL.
Yes.
And so if you're capable of that, I trust that you're capable of repeating that then for when you're, you know, 22, 23, as you develop in the NFL.
He's just so strong. Like his upper body is crazy strong. And I think that's, again, like if you're betting on, okay, this wasn't just, you know, a small sample size. Well, first of all, I believe he was used situationally in 2019, as I remember correctly, right? Like this is his only quote unquote full season as a starter. And
Quinn Williams-esque.
Yes. Yes. So again, like it was a weird season. A few guys got kind of slow starts. And if you're going to have a slow start and peak, you, you want a guy who not only has these measurables and traits and strength and length, but also does it against that offensive line. Just throwing out teams, we were, I don't know where, you can tell me where he's sort of like being mocked right now. I was putting together, we were doing some mocks, and I actually had Dallas, I thought Dallas needed him the most, and I have them trading down and then adding a corner later because I didn't think, I think you and I were DMing about this, I didn't think J.C. Horn, who Mel had mocked them, was a good fit for that, for what Dan Quinn does. And also I thought Barmore, three tech, that system just makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Dallas would be probably your best like straight fit. 10 value-wise, maybe high. And that's why the trade down makes sense there. Obviously, Dave Gettleman's never seen a DT he didn't want to draft. So that one's always a possibility there. The fit I kind of see is kind of where I think his floor might be is I think Tennessee would love to pair him with Jeffrey Simmons. They're trying to like go zag now. They try to build through their secondary. Now I think they're building through their D-line. Mm-hmm. Really don't have anyone besides Simmons now. I think I'd be hard-pressed to see him really fall past 22 because it's him, and then there's you're not going to get another guy that I would even feel great stepping and starting right away next year. It's just
really. What about the NC State Aleem
McNeil?
Okay, so he's just like a rock. I that's my comp for him is literally a boulder. You just set him down on the ground, and he does not move. I read somewhere that he's lost a bit of weight, so he's like 6'2" or 320. Yeah, so I don't think he has like that kind of upside necessarily, but you don't think he could start at nose right away in the NFL?
I think he could. I just don't think you're necessarily going to get impact, and especially as a pass rusher. He was limited even on tape in college as a pass rusher. And now he went to NC State. Obviously, you're not going to get the development you get at somewhere like an Alabama or Ohio State if you go there in terms of your pass rushing moves. So there's still sort of that unrealized, he really didn't have pass rush moves. He's just barreling straight ahead off the snap. He was a zero tech in that defense there, head up on centers every snap. But the first step is ridiculous. 317 pounds, he had a 1.68-10 split, which that's faster than Chris Jones's was coming out, who was like 3.10. So heavier than Chris Jones, better first step than Chris Jones coming out. That's moving. So I do like him in the second, but again, in terms of guys you think can make an impact year one, it just might be year two, year three until he really gets it going.
Moving is like one of my favorite football like draft words. Like he's moving. Well, yeah, like he's of course he's moving. They're all moving. I don't. That's what, how to.
It's
I don't
football.
Know. I feel like that one's really like picked up steam lately. It's moving. Moving is moving. Speaking of moving, let's get to the edge rushers because this is where I needed you the most today. Because I
need someone too.
This class is confusing and I just have all these feelings and I need to wade through the feelings. And also like I've been saying to you, like this is the consensus guy. Everybody agrees, whatever. I do not see consensuses on the edge. And I, after watching them, understand why, because you can poke holes in every single one of these guys. You can make an argument for by any of them. I mean, like the top five or six, any of them to be the best. And you could make an argument against any of them. So I feel like a few weeks ago, Quiddy Pay out of Michigan was, I kept seeing him number one and thought, okay. And then, you know, I hadn't watched him yet, like carefully, but then he started dropping. And then I watched him. And so I just want to, let's start here. He is, okay, what, 6'4", 272, crazy, crazy, crazy explosive, and it shows up on tape. But you know what doesn't show up on tape? A lot of production, Mike. So tell me, am I missing something? Like, what, I mean, like, do you think, first of all, you should start by saying, is he your number one? And if not, why? And how do you regard him?
He is our number one, and you're not wrong about the production. And that's the thing, I think that's why you're so torn on this edge class. Why everyone is so torn in this edge class. None of these guys are producing consistently. There's no one who's just, oh yeah, he wins. You know, there's no one you can really count on. Maybe Azeez Ojulari, the Georgia guy, is the only one. And he's really not, he's under 250 pounds.
He's small.
He's just not going to be everyone's cup of tea off the edge. He's a different type than all the rest of these guys. But Pei is number one on the PFF board, and two reasons. One is that he truly is out of this world athletic. Now, he didn't run a three cone at his pro day, but he sent us a video of him running, and it is a sub 6.5 second.
The way you just phrased that made me imagine him just like DMing you a video, like a handmade video. Like, he sent us a video. Tell me about this video that he sent.
It was, we got him on the podcast, and then he DMs us. It really was him on his phone taking a video of a computer screen.
It's so sketchy.
Of him running. Okay.
A video.
It was like a secret black market three cone.
Oh my
this
God.
This is the draft we're talking about, man. These are what.
You got any of those three cones? Something into like the Dave show. Okay, so tell me about this video that you got to see.
And so, I mean, it's blurry. It's running the three cone last spring, and it's under 6.5 seconds. Von Miller put up probably the freakiest three cone for an edge rusher before this at 6.7. So he is under 6.5, faster than Tyreek Hill ran a three cone, like an all time. And he's 270 pounds doing this. The guy is just a different level of athlete. He did 36 reps on the bench press at his pro day, and he doesn't have short arms either. That's 33-inch arms. He is just, and I mean, like, you can see the pics from his pro day. He looks like a creative player in NFL Blitz. Like, that guy looks like a character out of a movie. And just, yes, he has not produced necessarily, but the biggest thing is compare kind of how he looked on tape back 2 years ago when he first started playing, to then last year, to now this past season. And you see this incremental improvement every single year considerably with just how he uses his hands, pass rushing moves, to where he's putting in the work. Like, he's getting better. It's getting there. He just started from behind the eight ball because he was a running back in high school, goes to Michigan from a small conference, and I believe it was Rhode Island is where he was from, and then comes to Michigan, absolutely getting coached up there, but still not quite where he needs to be. But edge and rushing the passer is such a physically dependent position. Like, you either have the tools, what it takes to look like and be Myles Garrett, or you don't. And then if you don't, you're not going to be like Myles Garrett, sadly. So Quiddy Pei has those tools, though.
Yeah, he was also doubled a lot. I don't know if that's in your guide. Sorry, I probably should have checked if you guys chart that or anything. But I don't think we do with NGS.
It was not a guy.
Okay. Well, to my eye, he was doubled a lot and moved him inside a bit. And, you know, so
and
he like,
it,
wasn't,
it was four games also. Like, that was all he played this past year.
He wasn't often put, what I'm saying is like in a completely advantageous position. So, yeah, you are betting on potential, which again, like, we're not talking about, we're saying like there's no Chase Young. No one's arguing that Quiddy Pei should go in the top five, right? Like, we're talking about later. And so at a certain point with edge rusher, this potential that you speak of is so important. And you mentioned Azeez Ojulari. So out of Georgia, he is probably the most, I don't like pro ready is the wrong word because that's implies that he's going to translate to the NFL. I guess experienced looking is maybe what I'm going for. Looks like polished. He knows what he's doing. Polished is.
There
yes.
You
there you go. Yeah. He's just small, but Brian Burns was small. I wonder if he'll benefit from Brian Burns. I think they're pretty similar sized, if I'm correct.
Burns a little taller and then like leaner.
Yeah, Burns when he but they also like I think have that same flexibility on the edge when they corner that. I've seen him compared to Unique Ngakoue a lot, and that probably makes a little bit more sense. But I think the success of Burns probably will help him a little bit this year. And like, it's not quite like a Devontae Smith where you're like, the size doesn't show up on tape. There are times when the size does show up on tape and he gets pushed around a little bit and disappears. But to me, like the fact it's not a coincidence that he was probably the best pass rusher in the SEC. And it's not a coincidence that he is able to produce the way he did. So like, I would not be surprised. But despite being small, he also is incredibly athletic and explosive. So like, I wouldn't be surprised if he was the first edge rusher taken off the board based purely on what he's done in college.
No, I wouldn't be either. Honestly, any of like the top five guys, if they get drafted first, I'd be like, okay, I can see that. I can see the argument. You know, like a lot of these guys are also then going to be scheme dependent. Like, Azeez isn't going to fit into every scheme, but if you need like a 3-4 outside linebacker, you need the hand up sort of guy who can maybe drop into coverage. that's probably gonna be him. If you're looking at all these guys and kind of evaluating them, this is probably the one who's going to fit. And I also think, you know, Kalamon Chaisson was a similarly sized guy and was a first round pick last year. I think honestly, Ojulari is a better prospect than even he was. I thought he was a little more of a physical projection, whereas Ojulari, not necessarily the athlete. He's not a super athlete like Brian Burns was, where he can win just alone on that, but his hands mm-hmm. really are so good. And I think he'll be, if you told me one guy is going to be, that I have to put my hat in to be at least like an above average pass rusher in the NFL, I would say him. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think he will just be, but like Yannick Ngakoue is kind of the comp. It's just like, are you going to get a guy who can play on the field every down? And are you going to get a guy who disappears against better tackles? Because when he doesn't really have that athletic advantage, then all of a sudden he gets shut down.
It depends on the team, right? You mentioned scheme. And by the way, mentioning Ngakoue, like a couple days ago, we had to do like a quick, like, okay, who you're taking at the bottom of the draft? And I was giving the Ravens, and I was like, Azeez Ojulari, because I couldn't take a. The Ravens are picking in a weird spot because the wide receivers they need are not the wide receivers on the board there, in my opinion. It's a different conversation when Bateman comes off, but if Bateman comes off, but I gave them Ojulari because obviously the Ravens blitz a ton. And to me, if there's a coordinator who, you know, can manufacture pressure for him, it would be like a Wink Martindale. And so again, it really is all about which team, what do they need? How will they use him? Who's the rest of your top five? You said there's five.
So number two on the board is Penn State's Jason Elway. It's number two. Number four is Jalen Phillips from Miami. And then number five is Greg Rousseau from Miami.
Okay.
So that's the rest of the top five.
That seems really high for Elway to me.
Oof. So his argument's like the same as Pace, though. Yeah. He started playing football in 2016. Like, he is
football, like the sport.
Yes. Started playing the sport altogether like 5 years ago. And so that's kind of the thing with him. Five years of playing the game. You've already seen improvement, distinct improvement in the way he plays in the run game from 2019 to 2020. And if you're talking about freak athletes, he may be the single freakiest ever on the edge. Like his pro day, he ran the fastest 40 and had the farthest broad jump ever for a defensive end.
Did he text you the video or was it time?
Those were secret. Those were secret times that I got from him. But he had a 4.39 40 and 11'2" broad jump. Like, he would be athletic if he were a wide receiver. And this guy is a 257-pound edge rusher. And he's like 6% body fat. He's like DK Metcalf plus 30 pounds or 20 pounds.
He is terrifying. So you're going to hear this approximately 100 million times between, you've already heard, if you probably listen to football podcasts, he did not have any sacks in just a few games in 2020. He had five the year before. But when you watch, the pressures do show up. You know, you shouldn't box score watch Jason Elway. There are a couple games, Indiana, you know, where he really does stand out, and you can see that sort of explosive ability. I don't know. I just, it doesn't really, like, does he have moves? I don't know. I'm not a pass rusher, you tell me. I do. I mean, who does he remind you of? Let me ask you that. Other than DK Metcalf.
I mean, he is Montez Sweat-esque from just like
the length,
how he moves.
Yeah,
yeah, it's just like he's, and even say he's not an impact pass rusher right away, with the advent of all these, you know, option runs, unblocking defensive end, that sort of thing, his ability to track down guys like in space is kind of ridiculous, and play both ends of an option, or, you know, track down from the backside on outside zone when you're the unblocked guy. He's going to be able to just create havoc in that alone because of the fact that when he's at a standstill, he's about to run a 4.39 on you, you know? So he really is.
You mentioned the option because that was a note on Jalen Phillips, who I think might be my favorite. I'm not saying he should go first. I think he just might be like my favorite. I don't know. Mm-hmm. He's my beloved. Because I wrote eyes over and over watching him. I was just so impressed by his eyes, his ability to read and react. And frankly, like, he just looked the most complete to me. So for those who don't know, Jalen Phillips has like a crazy story. He was the number one defensive prospect in the country coming out of high school. Yeah. He went to UCLA, had a bunch of injuries, concussions, was hit by a car, medically retired, then came back to Miami after Gregory Rousseau opted out, or maybe before, but whatever, and completely filled the gap. And to me, Mike, he has it all. He has size, athleticism, explosiveness, moves. Like I said, the read and react ability. Like I just, I really, the other thing I wrote down over and over is motor. Like that dude does not quit. So I really like him.
No, and I honestly, if you really didn't have any of those injury or the concerns, the history of that, he would be in that mix for edge one for us. But it's that real, like the fact that guys retired from football already with concussions is a little scary. And the other thing is that he is, again, then the older than these guys, and this is his fourth year compared to some of them, compared to Rousseau, Owe, Ojulari. Like he has one more year of college experience. And he was another guy who went solely against right tackles. And if you think the right tackle, left tackle difference is big in pros, it's even bigger in college. So that always helps your production numbers if you're going up against the lesser tackle kind of every single time, which was what he was doing in Miami.
That's a good point. Well, staying with Miami real and wrapping up this group, Gregory Rousseau, it's interesting, you mentioned Montez Sweat for OA. I see him compared to Rousseau a lot. Opted out. Do you think that was a mistake? Not from a him perspective, life decisions, just like, do you think if he was drafted last year, I don't know, where would he have been for amongst edge rushers for you?
No, I don't think it was a mistake for him, honestly, because I think 16 sacks in the NFL's eyes, that was your last season, was still 16 sacks. Now, he wished he would have come back and tested a little bit better than he did, is I think his biggest worry. Mm-hmm. But if he came back and was no more polished than he was as a redshirt freshman, and that is kind of the worry with me with him, is he was not winning against tackles. You watched the vast majority of those 16 sacks come against guards.
Yeah.
And when you have 35-inch arms against college guards and you have the get-off he does, it's a little different. That's not necessarily something that you're thinking is going to translate immediately to the NFL. You'd rather that guy be able to win the edge. He didn't on his tape. And then he runs this awful three cone, really has poor change of direction drills. And it's like, is he ever going to beat tackles at the NFL? Because that's kind of what it takes. You got to be able to win. You got to be able to bend the edge against tackles if you're going to win there consistently. So the comp sort of usage is that was Jadeveon Clowney's problem in terms of he's always only been able to win inside against guards. So maybe he has to be used in that sort of a role. But yeah, I think he would have hurt himself more if he came back and then didn't solve that problem as a redshirt sophomore, which is very likely that he may not have.
Kind of looks like a pterodactyl. I wrote that
down. Oh, man. His build is about as tall a defensive end as he's 6'7".
He's a nightmare. That's interesting about three-cone. I hadn't seen his time. The Clowney thing. Ooh, now I see it. Now I can't unsee it. I've been thinking about Clowney, too, because ever since the Browns rumors have popped up, I've been thinking about, which is good because for Cleveland, by the way, because you can line him up inside, like you said, but you're not taking an edge rusher in the first round with that in mind. All right. So one more really quick, actually, because I've seen Joe Tryon rising up boards. And that kind of surprises me as a sort of fake Washington football fan. I say sort of fake because I'm not that passionate about it, but I do watch a fair amount. And I did watch the year before when he actually played. And he is very athletic and tall and strong and did come on as the season went on. I didn't see him as a first round pick, I guess. I don't know. What do you think?
No, talk about a guy who probably has opt out regrets. I think it's him because he could have come back and answered some of those production concerns because he's not a consistent passer. He has a bull rush on his tape. That's what he has. And that's kind of going to be his game at the next level. He is an explosive guy. He is a long defensive end. But if that's all you're bringing, and if you're not even consistent with it in college where you should have that physical advantage, it's like you're going to be more consistent all of a sudden in the NFL. And so he could have kind of answered that in 2020. We just didn't get to see it. And now he did test fairly well at his pro day. He had a good 10 split, a fairly good three cone, not exceptional, but the physical tools are there. But man, he really, if he comes back and kind of puts it all together, he would have been in that mix for that top edge Owe Pay. He would have been right up there with those top group for us. But I just can't see how, based off the 2019 tape, you can take that guy in the first round because he's not really that special as an athlete. He's got a good build, but like I said, with his level of production, he's not, is not close. He's in the 80s for us.
I just got a text from Dan Orlovsky saying, what? And I thought something crazy has happened. And it was just him sharing a tweet where I said I thought Trey Lance had the highest ceiling of any quarterback in the class. False alarm, Dan Orlovsky.
Oof, you can't sneak, a QB take past Orlovsky.
Highest ceiling is also – well, highest ceiling is such a cop-out take because you can say that about I have the highest ceiling of any quarterback in the – you know, it's not too late for me. You never know.
I mean, the draft is the home of cop-out takes. We rail against it on 2-for-1 drafts all the time about all right. Fun to watch being like the cop-out take of just calling a guy fun to watch. It's not
ooh,
a take.
Fun to watch. Just, fun to dude, watch.
The guy plays football.
All right. Well, after the break, let's talk about a player that's very fun to watch, Micah Parsons.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow, MinaShow, today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow.
Okay, Mike, everybody seems to agree Micah Parsons is the number one defensive player in the draft. I haven't really seen any. I guess I've seen some corners, maybe, but I think most people seem to agree it's Parsons. Who is your comp for him? And, like, are we talking all-pro ceiling? Like, what did you see out of him at Penn State before he opted out?
Comp is tough. I really haven't thought of a good comp.
I agree. That's why I asked, because I was having a hard time myself. So this is actually very annoying that you don't have one, because I was counting on you to give me one that I could steal.
He's a different breed. It's almost like an Isaiah Simmons, but on a different end of the spectrum from Isaiah Simmons, in that he is about as solid between the tackles as it gets. Like, taking on blocks, blitzing. It's about as good a linebacker, off-ball linebacker prospect as you'll ever see. He runs a 4.36. He's 246 pounds. I mean, he had a 10.6 broad jump. He is a monster. And when he comes downhill and attacks offensive linemen, I've said, if you just called him an edge rusher, I'd probably draft him before any of the edge guys.
He was an edge rusher.
He was, coming out of high school.
He looks like an edge rusher. Yeah.
And he plays kind of like one too. Like, yes. He's really is so talented, and just the way he's able to keep himself clean and get to ball carriers consistently. He's not Isaiah Simmons in coverage, but he is very good hunting guys down in space. He's not going to be your playmaker, get his hands on a ton of balls, but he doesn't miss tackles. Like, he doesn't let guys get out of his grasp. He has 11-inch hands. He's got the biggest hands ever measured for a linebacker, off-ball linebacker. He's a rare breed for the position. And so that's what I said. I'm not sure there's really a great comp for him. Probably going to be before my time, because guys, you know, maybe back in the 90s, maybe like LeVar Arrington. I don't know what guys looked like back then. I was like 9 years old when he was coming out, so I'm not exactly sure. But Parsons is just different.
I like him better than Simmons, because I just think, like, you know, he can play a bunch of positions, but he's a Mike. You just, like, yeah. There's not as much like, oh, I don't know, right team has to draft him. Like, any team can draft this dude, right? I guess what struck me the most about him, I mean, you said a lot of the stuff. I wrote down just all these notes from the Michigan. I mean, he had all those crazy stops at the end, Pitt, Iowa. Like the, I mentioned earlier, I think I was talking about Phillips and his reads. The thing that I find the most amazing about Parsons is sometimes he makes the wrong read or he'll overshoot. And then his ability, even when he screws up, to erase his own mistakes because of his change of direction ability and his speed and still make the tackle is so bananas. Like, he will be overly aggressive and shoot his gap and still make the tackle. And like, he'll be like so far deep in the backfield. I'll think, no way, no way, no way. And then he still gets, I mean, it's just remarkable. My only question mark on the field is coverage, which you addressed. But you know, like, I think his inexperience there suggests that that's something he can develop at the next level, especially again, given the just pure sideline to sideline speed he already has.
Yeah. And another guy who last time we saw him, like, we're basing this off of sophomore tape, true sophomore. We only got to see 2 years of him and then opted out. So it could have gotten better. We don't know. We just didn't see it.
Everyone seems to have the same order for linebackers. So this is a lot easier than edge rushers. They go Parsons and then Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, working on saying that quickly, out of your beloved Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
So he is the opposite, where I was like, it's very clear to me what Micah Parsons, no questions. I have a lot of questions about what Jeremiah is going to do in the NFL. You tell me, because he is not plug and play. He is, of course, a bit of a tweener. He was a rover for Notre Dame. How do you see him best being utilized in the NFL, given his size and his skill set?
Yeah, so he basically played slot, is like the rover position. Notre Dame is more akin to slot receiver, slot cornerback, excuse me, than anything in the NFL. I think if you wanted to, you could just play him a weak side linebacker and you'd be fine with it. Maybe not maximizing his skill set, but I think he could get it done. There are linebackers, you know, Darius Leonard coming to mind, Telvin Smith when he was obviously playing football, who played at his size and just were that guy. I think that maybe underutilizing him, maybe, like, with obviously newfangled defenses in the NFL and how they're approaching modern offenses and modern sort of trip sets that you're getting, quads and stuff that you're getting, you can have, you can give you that flexibility to go out and play slot and not have to match personnel necessarily and not have to do that. And I think that's his calling card. That's what he brings to the table that you're really not going to find in the third round, guys. There's not a lot of linebackers that move like him and that can still play in the box. So that's obviously his biggest thing. But then again, how does he take on blocks? We see him get stuck on wide receivers sometimes on his tape. And that's not the case for Micah Parsons. That's not the case for Zaven Collins. Like, he is not, you're going to have to live with plays like that for what he can do one-on-one when he's, you know, with a slot receiver, because he can hold his own in that regard.
Who do you guys have drafting him? Where would you like to see him drafted?
Where would I like to see him drafted? I think with the Chargers would be awesome. With him and Derwin James, just
full on positionless basketball,
and just have every guy magic there.
Play every position. That'd be pretty funny.
Be fun, but more realistically, he probably goes to someone like the Raiders and just plays in the middle, and it's boring and doesn't really make an impact.
Oh, that's sad. You mentioned Zaven Collins. I was DMing you about Zaven Collins because I was worried. And I said at the beginning of the show, I made a joke that might get edited out about Zaven Collins and his football team. But like, it really looks like, you know, the magnifying glass feature in broadcast when you're zooming in on a guy and then all of a sudden they make him look like approximately 1.75 times. He looks 1.75 times taller than everyone else. And it's not just like his size though. It's the way it's his wingspan too, but it's also the way he plays. It's like, you know how sometimes Giannis will take off and you're like, no way, no way, no way. That's how I feel watching Zaven Collins come downfield. Like, his blitzing ability is so, he's a linebacker. We're still talking about linebackers, folks. It's so crazy. And my question for you is, am I underestimating the fact that he was like a big brother playing with younger brothers in college?
There's a little bit of that. Obviously, I do worry he's not as sure a thing taking on blocks as Parsons was. Like, he still kind of gets by with the fact that he's just big as hell. The guys that are coming up and blocking him only have like 25 pounds on him, and that he's, you know, obviously much stronger. And so that part of the game, I don't see as locked in, but I do think just the way he moves in space for a guy that size, you know, 260 pounds, is special.
He doesn't really move.
Comp is Seabiscuit in the draft guide. He's just a horse. Like, the guy really does just start gliding across the field. It's incredible to watch.
But so graceful. Sorry, I'll stop. Yeah. I just love him.
And the instincts, I would really love him. I love his zone, the way he plays zone coverage. I think is exceptional. And so with that wingspan and the holes he can sort of shut down in a zone heavy team, I would love to see him do something like that.
Interesting. Are there any other linebackers that you feel very passionate about?
I love Nick Bolton from Missouri. And now he's not
going to
be everyone's cup of tea because he's 5'11", 230.
I love this time of year when I get to call guys Tommy. He's tiny. I'm so sorry. It's so insulting.
That's me. Like, I always feel bad when I call someone like soft. I'm like, soft relative to NFL players. Like, not to me. This guy's beat my ass.
Nick Bolton is not tiny. He is an average size man. However, he is a tiny linebacker.
Yeah. And he hits though. Like he's Micah Parsons. The guy rocks. Like, he got called for targeting once this year, and I'm not sure he actually targeted him.
I know exactly.
He just hit him too hard. Yeah. You know, he just hit tight end too hard over the middle of the field. So Bolton can rip, and his instincts for the position are just top notch. And I'm not sure he's ever going to be, you know, he's not going to be Bobby Wagner. He's not even close to that as an athlete. But I think the way he sees the game, like, I want that guy, especially when you got these modern defenses where linebackers are having to cover multiple gaps, where you're gapped down at linebacker position. Mm-hmm. They got to really find the ball nowadays. It's like, the guys that can do that are really, really valuable. To me, that's Bolton for sure.
Yeah, if he can see it. No, I'm just kidding. No, he is, you're absolutely right. I wrote down high floor, low ceiling question. I think that's probably, I'm guessing, how a lot of teams will regard him, because he knows how to play football. But it's just a question mark of size. But and because of that size, you know, you talked about the reading ability. Like, when you're that size, you can't do, remember all the stuff I was saying about Micah Parsons at the beginning, how he can like up and then his change of direction, his speed. Nick Bolton can't do that because he doesn't, he just doesn't have that ability, the speed, the change of direction, whatever, but he rarely makes mistakes. He takes the right angles. So the processing is so elevated that it ends up not mattering. So he is a cool player. I like him a lot for it. And he can start, you know, very quickly, I think, in the NFL. I really like this cornerback class. So I want to get to that. And you know what? Actually, let's just do the safeties, because I don't like the safety class, and we could leave the cornerbacks for the end, because the corners, cool, to me, are the most fun part of that. Safeties, this is another consensus number one, right? Everyone has Merrick from TCU. Have you seen a single draft that does not have him as the number one safety off the board?
Oof. I think
Trevon Merrick. Sorry.
Trevon Merrick, the TCU safety. I think Dane Brugler has Richie Grant, safety
spicy
one of The Athletic. So
45-year-old Richie Grant.
Safety, yeah. Right. The I think he's actually 24, right?
He's 24. Yeah,
24 year old Richie Grant.
He's basically a Gen Xer. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just hanging around fifth year, you know, just chilling. As one does. But yeah, Merrick is, he kind of ticks every box. You know, he's size, he's 6'2", 205, you know, speed. He ran the high 4.4s of his pro days, explosive. He's got length. He led the FBS in pass breakups each of the last 2 years. And he's playing a role in TCU where they're playing a lot of quarters, and he's a lot of the, where you're reading. It's a very kind of diverse role that you got to do a lot of different things when you're a quarter safety.
I actually wanted to ask you about that. Now that you mentioned that, do you think, I imagine he's going to be a free safety in the NFL. Do you think he can be a single high guy predominantly? Like, do you think he has the range?
Because
he did play so much
role,
quarters in TCU. Okay.
I wouldn't say it's the best role, but I think he's versatile enough to wear a lot of different hats.
The other TCU guy, is the teeny one, is also really fun. I don't know where he's being. Our Darius Washington, he is actually teeny. I am allowed to say he's teeny because he is teeny. But Is he being modest?
He's actually smaller than me. He weighs less than I do.
There you go.
I can say that.
Legitimately teeny.
He is 5'8", 178. He's the smallest safety ever to weigh in.
He's got an inch and a half on me.
If he would have been at the combine. So.
Is he being mocked in the first three rounds? Because I really like him.
He may come off the board towards the end of the third round.
Okay.
Just because he could still like floor. This guy's going to be a really good slot cornerback. And you've seen slot cornerbacks drafted that high. I'm trying to think of the last one who was really tiny to go that in the third. The Ole Miss guy went to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm blanking.
But back to Merrick. So, yeah. So he's going to go in the first round probably, right?
Yeah, I would be surprised if he doesn't. Obviously, I was kind of surprised that McKinney didn't go in the first last year. But
me too. That was the big dropper day one. Yeah.
But yeah, I would be surprised if Barry didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I said he's a free safety, but he's tough. He hits hard. He's fast. He is athletic. I think he's explosive. Plays ball well. He's got production. To me, there's a reason why he's the number one. Yeah, 9 passes defense. I was just looking that up. I think to me the bigger question mark is just I don't think another safety probably goes in the first. You mentioned Richie Grant and maybe. I guess I could see it.
Maybe Elijah Molden.
Maybe. So let's talk about Elijah Molden as a good transition to the corners. My beloved Elijah Molden, because we're talking about slot corners as well. I think he is like a absolute NFL starting caliber player. I said player. He is a slot corner, but you know, if you're a slot corner in the modern NFL, you're on the football field a lot. So he is the Washington guy I'm choosing to stand for. I'm not standing for Tryon. I'm not standing for the DT, Levi Onwuzurike. I think I said that right. But I will stand for my beloved Elijah Molden. I just think he is, like, so smart. Like, he's one of my favorite football players. He was one of my favorite players to watch at Washington DBU because not only is he like fast, just slip that in, fast, twitchy, athletic. He is so good at reading quarterbacks. I just think like, man, if I was a defensive coordinator, I want that kid.
I love Molden too. My only worry is just like, is he anything more than a slot? I don't think he's going to play on the outside. He's 5'10", 190. He's really would be undersized. And outside's a very different role than inside. Can he transition to safety? I think he can. I think he's a really good tackler. My favorite thing about watching his tape, and you watch a lot of slot cornerbacks, and a lot of the plays they make on the ball are coming downhill. You know, they're off coverage or in zone or whatever, and you're breaking on a slant, that sort of thing. And yeah, he does that. But then a lot of those guys who do that, all of a sudden you get a vertical route, and they're just toast because they're mm-hmm. flat-footed. They're just waiting to break on that slant. That wasn't Molden at all. He was a vertical route. He could flip his hips and then go with them. So he wasn't jumping stuff. He's reading. And it's a big difference. And so you saw him make pass breakups and going down the field on vertical routes. So as far as if I'm going to grab a slot cornerback in this draft class, that's like a need. I want to fit in my defense. Molden should be number one on your board. He's that good.
Let's talk about the slot thing, though, for a second, because I talked a little bit about slot receivers last week, because there's so many slot receivers in this class, like at that top, in that sort of second tier, right? And I think some of that has to do with the way football has changed, obviously, the value of those receivers has changed a little bit. Like, do you think that slot cornerbacks in the draft, like a true slot, might be drafted higher than he was 3 or 4 years ago? Setting aside Bolt Molden himself, who we agree is great.
I think you're seeing those guys get paid in free agency also. Mm-hmm. Like, you're seeing the NFL come around to this guy's playing more snaps than my nose tackle. You know, realizing that the value proposition there, if you can pay a nose tackle $10 million a year, you could pay a slot cornerback or should be paying a slot cornerback at least that then. So, yeah, I maybe not first round, but I think Byron Murphy came off the board at the top of the second, obviously the other Washington corner, and he was more than likely going to play the slot for them in Arizona. So I think you're seeing that's distinctly a possibility.
All right, let's talk about the outside corners. True or false? I just watched a lot of cornerbacks are very fresh in my mind right now. True or false, Caleb Farley is the best cornerback in this class.
I think that's true. And if it weren't for the back injury, he was number one on the board prior to that. Or prior
he was
to near the surgery.
Okay, so before.
Yeah.
So tell us about the injury. So tell everyone like what the deal is with that, because it is
so
obviously
he had a micro discectomy, the same surgery that Tiger Woods had. Now,
well, that's not good. Well, I don't want to hear that.
Exactly. That's why I was texting my dad about it, who's an orthopedic, former orthopedic surgeon, and he said you can recover quickly from it, but the worry is then is the back going to be able to take hits after that on an NFL football field consistently without it then recurring. And I think that's the scary thing is I think that's the second time he's had that back injury already. And so that's the kind of the worry with Caleb Farley right now. But man, he told us he ran a 4.24 whatever in training. And he said he's always ran in the 4.2s when he's been at Virginia Tech, but wouldn't tell people that because they would think he was lying. And on his tape, he looks like the guy can fly.
He can fly and he's 6'2", right? Yeah. Like
6'2", 207.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like his ability to close ground is so crazy for a guy with his length. And that's assuming you've beaten him on the line, which is a task in and of itself. I just think to me, he is the most scheme agnostic, ceiling is the sky, has it all cornerback in this class. However, everything you said is just very real. I also probably should have mentioned at some point he went to Virginia Tech. Sorry. So, okay. So because of the injuries, he has been falling. Right now, it seems like most people have Patrick Surtain second overall. And I wish I was more excited he's really good. And I saw, by the way, his pro day was off the charts. So Patrick Surtain II, out of Alabama, if you know the name, obviously his dad was in the NFL as well. Rarely targeted. strong. He's fast. He's not Caleb Farley fast. He's very polished. I think that is probably the right word to use him. He doesn't have many bad games. He has a high floor.
That's probably that's the argument for him. Is he just is very safe. If he's a bad NFL cornerback, that would be incredibly surprising. You know?
Yes.
That's kind of.
Who did you comp him to, by the way? Just out of curiosity.
Oh gosh, who did I comp
him
to?
It was a better
I am just legit off with names now, but Trumaine Johnson, a better, more polished Trumaine Johnson. So they're similarly sized,
it's pretty funny.
Big, long, but not super twitchy cornerbacks.
Yeah, there's not super twitchy. There's a little bit of stiffness to his game.
Yeah.
But
he kind of just gives inches and makes it up because he's long, gets his hands on guys really, really well at the line and he can stay there. But kind of consistently just a little step behind and just never really locking guys down, kind of the way you see a J.C. Horn lock guys down.
Yeah, we were talking about Nick Bolton. I'm not comparing him to Nick Bolton at all, but the way in which sometimes if you don't have crazy athletic traits, you have to make up that margin, if you will, with in Nick Bolton's case, sort of his processing ability, and with Surtain as well. I feel like his understanding of leverage and positioning really works to his advantage. It's so annoying because he is fulfilling all the stereotypes of the son. They're like, he really knows the game. He's in the playbook, but they're all really true with him. When you watch him, he clearly has been around football his entire life and it really shows. And then you got if he's a Virgo, JC Horn is an Aries.
You're losing
astrology.
Me.
Yeah. Astrology stuff. So JC Horn, is, I think, the most hilarious player in the entire class. And so South Carolina corner, rapidly rising up boards, extremely physical, allowed the lowest completion percentage in the, he's Joe Horn's son. But you see, he's a receiver's son. So very different. So lowest completion percentage in the SEC. Just I posted a clip of him knocking down Seth Williams, and dudes kept being like, that's not even like Seth Williams, because they didn't see him at the bottom just pushing him down, because it wasn't the ball wasn't actually going to Seth Williams. But that we got that clip. So with ESPN, they cut us reels. And so you get to see the same play from like 20 angles sometimes. And that play, honestly, I was cackling to myself just watching it from every single possible angle. It's so funny. He is comedy.
Yeah. You wonder if he has daddy issues with how much he hates wide receivers. I mean, he really can't stand them. He go. I'm obviously joking, but he really, like, at the line of scrimmage, is he wants to end it right there. And he wants the screen, like you said, with Seth Williams, he wants to blow up a block. Like, he plays the game like the guy across from him stole his money. And that's a good thing at the cornerback position. Like, that's the mentality you want. You'd rather reel that guy in. And if he played the way he plays right now, he's going to get
It's a good thing until he gets flagged for holding 100 times a game. Because that is my biggest question mark. Can he do it? Is any of this legal? Is what I wrote down. I don't know.
And I'd rather reel that guy in than try to coach that up into a guy. And so you're not gonna fit him into every scheme. And like you said, I don't think he's a great fit for Dallas. Like a zone scheme. Like, this guy is press man fit all day. That's what you want him doing. And the other crazy thing about him, he's only 20 years old and just turned 20. Mm. He won't turn 21 until next November. So he is a young dude already, dominating SEC competition.
You, I think, texted me or DM'd me that there, you had five corners. So you weren't including Molden. I assume your other two are Greg Newsome and Asante Samuel Jr.
Yes.
In which order?
I think so. Greg Newsome. Okay, good. Three now on the cornerback board with Farley falling, and then Asante Samuel Jr. at five.
Okay, I really like Greg Newsom, so I'm excited about this. Tell me why you like him.
He's got the best just feet of any of the corners in the class. Like, we talked about Sertan just not quite having that twitch and the smoothness and just being a little stiff. Horn in off coverage is just vastly different, his kind of balance and change direction, than he is when he's right up in your hip pocket. But Newsom from off coverage, my Lord, watching him like transition, like, it's like ballet, watching a guy just move so gracefully, and is a ridiculous athlete in his own right. Kind of the only worry with him is he saw Sertan and Horn play top flight competition 3 years of their career with Newsome. Really only his past year, and he gets hurt in the Ohio State game, doesn't even get to play that full game against.
Right. They didn't have a lot of it.
All season. So you just don't really know for sure, but man, he's talented.
I know. That was the game where they didn't have a lot of it, right? The Northwestern game, or they were missing couple guys in that game, that Ohio State game, right?
That was a
bummer to me, because I really wanted, because I really, the Northwestern defense is so fun. I really wanted to watch them against the best competition. But yeah, to me, I guess it is quality of competition. Like, on one hand, you see the stats are crazy. I think he led the FBS in passer rating and a bunch of other crazy stats, but it didn't really go up against that many good wide receivers.
Wisconsin, Illinois.
Yeah. We were talking about J.C. Horn is press man. I really think Newsom can play. He's pretty scheme agnostic. He's a ball hawk. He's always got his hand in there. He just looks really smooth when I watch him. I don't want to say Patrick Sertan stiff. He's not stiff, and he's incredible athlete and explosive or whatever. But Newsom, there's just like a fluidity to his game that I think is really special.
Yep.
I like Samuel. God, there's so many kids of players. Jesus. Oh, I feel so old. Oh, I have an existential crisis. Just tell me why you like Samuel. I gotta process this. I can't. Isn't that? This one hurts, right? Junior, this one hurts.
This one's the closest also to his father. Like, he plays like Asante Samuel. You'll see just the way
you don't want to do that comp because it feels lazy.
Jumps routes. It does. But I think it's Asante Samuel Sr. who can tackle. Like, this guy actually goes and sticks his nose in it. Maybe Asante Samuel Sr. did in college, and I don't remember him coming out. And then once he got to the NFL and got paid, he's like, started making business decisions. And maybe Junior will do the same, but I don't even think it matters if he starts doing the same, because this guy he's kind of just, you talked about like the feet of Newsom. Like, Asante Samuel, from like a standstill, he could just get up to full speed any direction. It's incredible to watch, just like his kind of twitch from a standstill or from just when he's is changing directions is so juiced up. And obviously, like I said, sees the game. He's been breaking up passes. He's a true freshman.
Do you think this cornerback group is deep enough to the point where, like, it's not, you know, I mentioned earlier that Dallas was a team I had trading down from 10, grabbing Barmore, and then potentially getting, you know, one of the later corners. Like, do you think they're deep enough to where you don't need to get one of those top two guys?
I don't think you need to get one of those top two. Like, I see this almost as a tier of five.
Yeah.
With those Surtain, Horn, more than which, what's your scheme fit with those mm-hmm. tier? Because obviously, if you're playing press man, you're not really going to want to pass on J.C. Horn for Asante Samuel. It's not going to be what you want. But if you're, you know, if you're kind of a diverse scheme, you could probably plug in it like Newsome, Farley, Samuel. You can plug in any of those guys to your defense and be happy with it. But then it's like, that's kind of it, though, after those five. I really don't think the second tier of cornerbacks is even close to what you're getting with those five.
Just wrapping, like, of all the, and you include the ones we haven't talked about, like, of all the position groups in this class, what do you think is the deepest?
That one's, I think, tackle, just comparatively year on year.
Yeah.
I don't think you see this many tackles come out that, or even, I guess, just offensive line in general, because some of these guys later on, you can kick to the interior if you really wanted to. But I think we got 11 guys in the top 50 at the tackle position right now.
Wow.
Which is,
I mean, I guess
it doesn't happen.
I guess you could, I mean, you could also argue quarterback just by virtue of the fact that I think there are five quarterbacks who are like really good.
Yeah.
I know this is the time of the year when I have to say who's good and who sucks, but I was doing every day we do the quarterbacks on TV and I was like, I just like them all. I just like all five. I think they're all good.
You don't want to trash Mac Jones or Justin Fields.
He's like good. They're both good. I don't, I like, you know, maybe you can say he's not worth that kind of trade, but okay. As always, let's wrap up with five questions for our guests.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
First four questions are from me. Fifth is always from my dog, Lenny. It's not, I didn't write it. Okay. Question number one. Who would you put in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Julian Edelman or Dante Hightower?
Oh, no. Can I say neither? There's
no, there's a reason why, okay. I put it this way.
Okay, sorry. I'll go Dante Hightower.
Right answer.
Respective to his position, he is the better player.
I also think, though, like, they're, the thing is, with both, they have the same argument for, which is... Dubs, but also, like, can you tell the story of postseason football without, you know, like, although nobody will make that for Dante Hightower because he's a linebacker, but yeah. I maintain that the Patriots don't win those Super Bowls without Dante Hightower just as much as they don't win them without Julian Edelman, but he'll never benefit from that. Anyways, I love
That's not, that's only for, like, direct counting stats positions that argument gets made.
Yes. For. Yes. Another way of saying white wide receivers. Okay. Question number two, which team do you think is most likely to trade up for a quarterback?
Ooh, I think the Broncos are most likely to trade up for a quarterback.
We did Mel's mock today, and he had the Broncos taking Micah Parsons and Justin Fields going 11 to the Patriots, and I was like twitching on air. I was like, they can't do that. If they do that, like, I would quit Broncos fandom. I cannot.
Yeah.
Like, you just shouldn't. It's just like, that's just should be unacceptable.
I mean, just think about Drew Locke in college, how he played at Missouri, and then think about Justin Fields, how he played at Ohio State.
Oh my God!
Which one would you want?
Drew Locke ranked 33rd in. I was just grabbing them before the show on target percentage, 33rd in completion percentage, 35th in QBR, 30. Like, every single one of, like, the important stats, he ranks outside the top 32. And you know what? Yeah. He played 4 years. We know who he is.
Sorry. Did that one good game, though.
Oh, my God. Like, right? Like, the Texans.
I don't even actually remember.
he crushed the Texans defense. Yeah. So it's like Denver, New England, Washington, Chicago, I guess, are the four. There's no one else who would make sense.
I mean, the Saints are always liable to make a crazy move.
Wild move. New England is, it seems like everyone's really hovering around New England and Denver. I don't think Washington's going to do it. Maybe.
No, yeah.
But I don't think so.
They would just have so far to go, is the problem.
Exactly. Denver doesn't have that far to go. But Justin Fields is tall, although Elway's not the guy. So sort of. I don't know. Who really knows? All right. Question three. Well, let's talk about the quarterbacks. Who is a, outside of the group of five quarterbacks, as I'm calling them, who is a quarterback that you like?
Ooh, I like Kyle Trask. I still think.
You said that so defensively.
He gets hated on for the talent around him. Like he had Kyle Pitts, he had Kadarius Toney. Thinks he's a product of that. To some degree he is. But a lot of those like catches on tape that Kyle Pitts are making, a lot of guys don't make those throws. It's kind of a symbiotic relationship where the quarterback's got to give you a good opportunity to make a catch that where only you can catch it and not the defender can make a play on it. So I think Kyle Trask like has some of that creativity to his game. He's not super athletic, but I think he manipulates pockets really well. And I still think there's something to the fact that he's only started in football for 2 years. He didn't start in high school. So
yeah,
I think that's interesting sort of trajectory.
He played with Derek King, right? That was Derek the whole King, yeah. Cute story of them. Okay. I'll allow it. It'll be interesting to see if any, I guess the Stanford Mills people are saying might go second, but.
Oh yeah. I or sixth, you mean, or wait, in the second?
In the second round. Yeah. Oh, okay. I haven't seen that many other, I guess Trask is being mocked second, but I don't know. I just feel like. Just wait a year.
That's not where I'd want to draft one.
All right. You know what? I passed over this from my Seahawks, but since I have you here and you're the expert, who would you draft for them in the second round? My beloved Seattle Seahawks, selfishly using this to ask a question for myself.
Oof. You got to be praying that Walker Little, you and Lenny, got to be praying that he
really? Yeah. Okay. All right.
I think that's what you want. He obviously got screwed by the fact that he's played one game in the last 2 years. I think we're talking about him as a sophomore in that same group.
Tell the story for those who don't know Walker Little, because it's
okay. So, Stanford tackle, 5-star recruit, started as true freshman for David Shaw. Obviously, like a rarity there in that offense and what they do. Has a really good sophomore year. It's like really good down the stretch. I think he's only allowed one pressure in his final six games of 2019. Then he gets hurt first game of 2019. His junior year. And if you go back and look at preseason mocks prior to that, it's like you would not find him outside the top 20 picks in a 2020 mock. And he was in the conversation with Wirfs, Thomas, Becton as the top tackle in that class, Jedrick Wills as well. Like he was in the conversation for that prior to that season, but then he got hurt, then opts out, and then skips the Senior Bowl as well, or opts out of the Senior Bowl as well. So we just have not seen the guy play football in an insanely long time. But like his pro day, he crushed it. He was on the trajectory to be that guy. We just never got to see him be that guy. So he falls to you guys in the second round, Seahawks, man, that you could be getting the top 10, 15 player that we just didn't really get to see develop like that.
I'm looking at a photo of him as you're talking, and he looks like Carson Wentz times three. Like if you just expanded Carson Wentz three times with like magnifying glass.
Yeah. That plays in the offensive line, though. That's more of an offensive line aesthetic.
Yeah, it works. It works. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, last question, as always, comes from Lenny. Sorry. There's the messenger. It's my co-host, my dog. Lenny knows that, he heard through the grapevine that you were on our beloved ABC show, The Bachelor. He wants to know, if you didn't speak, were you really on the show?
Oh, Lenny, how are you going to do me like that? How are you going to dog me like that, Lenny?
Did you speak? I don't know, actually.
They showed my intro. That was about it.
Oh, no. No lines?
I got two roses.
Two roses and no lines? Oh.
I got a couple lines. I had a catch in a football game. That's all that matters. Actually, I'm still salty about this, and I'm going to tell the story because I'm still salty about it. But I had an interception in that game off of Garrett, who ends up winning the show. I had a one-hand interception guarding the guy who was the pro basketball player, Kristan.
Oh.
One-handed interception, and they didn't show it. They didn't show it on TV. I could not believe. Keyshawn Johnson was announcing. It's actually kind of cool.
It's my co-host on NFL Live. Shout out Keyshawn. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, Mike.
For sure, Mia. Thanks for having me.